Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
We live in a world of ratings and reviews. The general public seems to grade us in real time on our performance as professionals. Some are uncomfortable with our Yelp culture. Fair enough. But the more open and self-assured of us use reviews to improve, to hone healthcare delivery. Let's talk about how to increase patients' willingness to recommend you. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Susan Baker. Ms. Baker is a seasoned healthcare executive. She has worked for Mayo Clinic, focusing on patient experience. Susan is the author of Split Second Kindness, Making a Difference When Time is Limited. Susan Baker, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thank you, Mike. I'm excited to be with you today.
Oh, well, we're thrilled to have you. Now, Susan, you're an expert in many areas of healthcare and patient experience. But today I'd like to focus upon increasing patients' willingness to recommend. Are the issues and metrics different for increasing recommendations for a healthcare provider versus a healthcare system?
They absolutely are, Mike. And a question that I urge people to ask themselves and really think through is, what is your goal in increasing patients' willingness to recommend? So for a chief experience officer of a health system, that person's goal might be to increase the scores for public reporting. For a chief financial officer, it might be to increase the revenue that comes from higher HCAHPS or CAHP scores. For someone who's interested in attracting new patients to the organization or a practice, for example, they may be more interested in Google reviews, for example, or reviews posted on any form of social media. And so because the approaches are slightly different, I think it's important to decide. Some patients will gladly complete, you know, a 30 plus question HCAHPS survey and post about you positively on social media, but other people are going to choose based on the request that you make of them.
That makes sense. Let's talk about consistency. We know consistency is very important to patients. How can consistency be increased?
Mike, you are absolutely right about the importance of a consistent experience. You know, when I was growing up, Durgan Park Restaurant was a place that everyone had to experience at least once. The word of mouth on Durgan Park was like anything else in our small town south of Boston. And to have dinner with your family at Durgan Park meant driving into the city, climbing a flight of stairs to be greeted by a rude hostess who assigned you a long table where you would eat with people you didn't know. And you expected that your server would treat you horribly throughout the meal. And that was the promise that was created by friends who had already dined at Durgan Park. And if your server wasn't snarly enough, you actually left disappointed. You needed a server who was solidly rough around the edges in order to have a story worth telling at work or at school the next day. Well, just like patrons of Durgan Park, patients expect the experience to match the rhetoric. So the extent to which an individual's healthcare experiences match his or her or their expectations influences their willingness to recommend a healthcare clinician or a healthcare organization. But instead of snarly servers, patients expect healthcare professionals to be kind, patient, compassionate, and empathetic. The key to consistency is to identify or establish some highly visible behaviors. I want to repeat that, highly visible behaviors that are important to patients. So for example, bedside shift reports, updating the whiteboard every day. And where do you find your best opportunities for consistency? Well, those best opportunities can often be found in HCAHPS or other CAHPS survey results. That's good data to consider. Where an organization scores high is where consistency already exists. So you capitalize on those practices. And where there's a lot of room for interpretation on some of the questions, you want to define for patients how you deliver on those. So for example, every survey asks a question, were you treated with dignity and respect? Well, respect is critically important to everyone, but we define it differently. So I created a poster for organizations to use. And the poster simply says, we want you to feel respected during your visit with us. To show respect for you, one, we will sit down for part of the visit with you. Two, we will not ask questions while looking at the computer screen. Three, we will not interrupt you. And four, we will ask, is there anything else you would like to tell me at least once during your visit? Thank you for trusting us with your care. You see the most consistent application of behaviors when the definitions are visible to both the person providing the care or service and the person receiving the care or service. So a simple poster like that, and Mike, I can make that available to share in the show notes if you'd like.
Oh, that'd be fabulous. I think audience members might really put that to use. It seems like you're setting expectations for consistency as well as being consistent. Is that a fair interpretation?
Yes, managing expectations in that way helps people know how to be right. You know, they can predict what's going to happen next and when to be satisfied. And of course, when people are satisfied, that's a positive experience that they're more likely to recommend.
It's interesting that you brought up the respect example, because in preparing for our time together today, I took a look at your website, which is very well done. And you have a course on respect in the older patient. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure, I can. So respect in the older patient experience was developed because, with the exception of pediatric practices, almost every healthcare organization has some or many older patients. And older patients, respect for older patients takes a specific skill. And I think one of the understandings that helps us have greater empathy for older patients is to understand that being older is a series of losses. And so the course takes people through what those losses will mean for them in the future. You know, it's kind of a fun course. It's actually only a 30-minute course, but people learn to draw in it, and then they draw very important things of their life. And then as they go through their 60s, 70s, and 80s, they have to choose which things to lose. And then at the end of the course, of course, they get all those things back. And then we talk about gratitude and woven throughout are ways to show respect. So respect's very important to me. I mention it a lot. Sorry.
Well, no, I don't think there's anything to be sorry about it. It is important and something that sadly seems to be diminishing as time goes on. Let's shift a little bit to patient preferences. Patient preferences must play a significant role in patients' willingness to recommend. How can practitioners identify and respond to individual preferences?
Indeed, Mike. People do value experiences in which their unique preferences are identified and respected. And one of the easiest ways to identify preference, of course, is to just give a choice. Now, healthcare was traditionally an order-giving setting, wasn't it? You know, we gave a lot of direction, and it's subtle, but there is a difference between take a seat and would you like to have a seat? So for organizations that want to be deeply serious about patient preferences, I recommend tapping into the expertise of their birthing center team. If they don't have a birthing center team, find a group, you know, even an online group to talk about this. Birthing plans have been widely used for ages, at least 30 years, maybe 40. And birthing center teams are experts in identifying and respecting preferences. Now, as to respecting preferences, I live in Fairfield County, Connecticut, where a popular grocery store here is Stu Leonard's. And when you go to a Stu Leonard's grocery store, there is a huge, and I mean huge, maybe 9 feet, 10 feet high stone. And etched in stone is our two rules. Rule number one, the customers are always right. And rule number two is if the customer is ever wrong, reread rule number one. Well, that's sweet if you're a grocery store, but healthcare is very, very different. And so by respecting preferences, I don't mean honoring preferences, because we can't always do that. Patients sometimes want a medication that's in conflict with a more important medication they're taking, or we don't have an appointment at that specific time. But acknowledging the preference can make all the difference. And I'll give just a quick personal example, if I might. I travel a lot for my work. And so I'm not a car person, but I have to rent cars often. So I spoke with the rental agency that I use most often. I said, tell me, which car do you have most in your fleet? And they identified the Ford Taurus at the time. And so I learned the Ford Taurus. I didn't buy one, but I learned everything about it, because the last thing I or the rental company want me to be doing while I'm driving, you know, 60 miles on a highway is figuring out how to turn the windshield wipers on. So I learned that car. Well, it would be unrealistic of me to expect that every time that I show up at the airport rental counter that they would have that car available. The savvy person would say, Mrs. Baker, we know you like the Ford Taurus. We don't have one today, but we've chosen the one closest to it. Now, I'm not getting what I want, but the acknowledgement of my preference gets us halfway there. It's the same thing that a registrar would say to a patient, you know, Mr. Ackerman, I know you like early morning appointments. We don't have one as soon as your physician needs to see you. Would it be possible for you to do a midday appointment any day next week? So acknowledging the preference is a way of respecting the preference, even when you can't honor it.
Well, it seems to me to acknowledge the individuality of patients, which is important, I think, for folks, that they don't feel like they're just being moved down Henry Ford's assembly line, right?
Absolutely. That, so
we're all treated differently. And certainly that would give me some confidence in my providers that they're actually, you know, thinking things through from my point of view, or interested in my best interest. Can you say a little bit more about building patient trust and confidence?
Yes. So at the Stanford Hospital and Clinics in California, some emphasis was placed on some simple and quick ways to provide that personalized care that you just mentioned. And these techniques resulted in significant increases in likelihood to recommend in all of the areas surveyed, which were the emergency department, inpatient, ambulatory clinics, and their cancer center. And Dr. Weinacker, the chief of staff, described the techniques as painfully obvious, but hadn't been applied consistently. And they were simple things such as introduce yourself to everyone in the room, acknowledge any wait, convey that you know something about the patient's history, asking for the reason for the patient's visit. And Dr. Weinacker said it was surprising how often the patient's chief complaint differed from the physician's understanding of the reason for the visit, expressing empathy, sitting on the same level, using body language that implies interest rather than impatience was key, asking permission to do tests, including patients and family members in decision about therapy, and ensuring that patients knew the treatment plan. Now, that's a list of 10 behaviors that they started to apply consistently. My suggestion sometimes is that people start with 4 or 5 at the most. We can create a great list of 25 patient satisfying behaviors, but people can't always, you know, demonstrate 25 behaviors in a visit. So then you've got some inconsistency. I'd rather see a team do 4 things, highly visible, exceptionally well, so that they're known for that, than give people a huge menu and then, you know, things are less consistent, because reliability is critical for willingness to recommend. Now, the recommendation, to get to the recommendation part of our talk, recommendations are of healthcare professionals are pure gold for building trust and confidence, because insiders know the real story. So when you see a testimonial by a clinician who was a patient, it's highly, highly influential. And one of my favorites, and unfortunately, it's not available any longer on YouTube. I checked today to see if it was, but Arkansas Heart Hospital in Arkansas always scores very high on willingness to recommend. And a staff nurse named Erin Berry, wearing surgical scrubs with an open heart surgery scar that was just visible. And she said, when I tell a patient that I know how he feels, it's because I do. When I tell a family member what to expect, it's because I know. When I tell someone fighting heart disease that I understand their concerns, their questions, their fears, it's because I've experienced them all. And when I tell them that Arkansas Heart Hospital is where I would be if I needed care, it's because it was. How influential is a testimonial like that? And when you see a patient comment on social media that's followed by a comment of the colleague of the person who was named, that's powerful too. So just for example, I'm a surgical nurse with Dr. Samuel, and she is an excellent surgeon, an excellent person, so gracious to everyone she meets. Now, I'm more willing to recommend because people in the know, Dr. Samuel's colleagues, also praise that her as a clinician or the organization. That simple comment backs me up in the recommendation that I'm going to make. And by the way, just to sum up this piece on trust and confidence, Prescaney analyzed 937,000 patient surveys, and they said that the three key drivers influencing patients' willingness to recommend: one, confidence in the clinician. And Mike, you just mentioned what would give you confidence. Two, the care team worked well together. And we've mentioned a few things already, the bedside shift report, or somebody making a positive comment on someone, a patient's social media post or a Google review. And then the third was concern shown for patient worries. And you heard Erin Berry in her testimonial about the Arkansas Heart Hospital mention that very thing. All of these three factors can be highlighted in comments by internal experts, the care team.
Very interesting. And you're right, that was a powerful testimonial endorsement of the Heart Hospital. You briefly touched upon social media. How can social media and online reviews increase patient loyalty and willingness to recommend? So oftentimes we think of these as just from the side of getting new patients into a practice. I'm interested in your thoughts on people that have been in the practice and willingness to recommend.
Sure. So if you were walking down a hallway in your organization and someone stopped and thanked you for something or complimented you for something, would you pass by without even a word? Of course you wouldn't. And yet every day I see testimonials in social media that are not acknowledged. And that is a crying shame. Because if I've had a great experience and I go to social media to recommend someone and I see no comments on the other posts, I'm less likely to take time crafting something that seems to make, because it seems to make no difference to the clinician or the organization that I feel so positive about. And yet on the other hand, when I do see positive comments about the post from the organization, that says to me, what the previous poster said is true. This is a caring organization worth remembering. There's also an opportunity for organizations to create what I call spread with social media comments. So I've seen organizations do this with their HCAP comments. You know, they say, here are some comments from our latest quarterly HCAPs, and there's no names associated, even if the patient has given their name in the survey. And what's strategic is to share, if willingness to recommend is important, to share the comments where the person has said something such as, I always recommend you to my friends and family, or I'm proud to recommend Dr. Puglisi to people who are looking for an orthopedic surgeon. When people say that they're going to recommend, that just plants a seed for future recommendations and for people to say, look at all these people recommending this hospital or this person. When you're promoting positive reviews, always choose the reviews that reflect where you're most consistent. So what are your best visible behaviors that everyone in the organization does, and or where the person mentions recommending you?
Do you think it's appropriate to ask patients for reviews?
I think it's critical to ask patients for review. And of course, here's where you want to really think through what's your goal. So if your goal is to increase your HCAP scores, you want to follow the CMS guidelines, and they're very clearly spelled out on the CAPS website about how to do that. And that takes some role playing with your team. I'll share just a quick story. My dad is 92, and he was our last man standing. He was the only person in the family who had not had COVID. And then he went to a Christmas event who got COVID, ended up in the hospital with sepsis, very severely, critically ill, and had to then move into assisted living. And so I started doing his email because he wasn't as independent as he had been before. He's had the same physician for 40 years, and he would, I'm not exaggerating, he would give up his life for his doctor. He loves his doctor. So the survey comes. I said, Dad, would you like, I know how much you think of Dr. Zaidi. Would you like me to fill out the survey? Do you want to help me? And he goes, oh, I never fill those out. And I said, Dad, I've devoted 30 years of my life to this. Why aren't you filling them out? He said, no one reads them. That's number one. And no one, he's never asked me to fill it out. So having people feel comfortable. And so it can be, you know, helping people get comfortable with asking for recommendations. So in a discharge conversation, you could ask, what will you tell your family or your friends about your stay with us? Or when a patient expresses gratitude for a good clinical outcome, you could say, what would you tell someone considering this procedure? Now, if it's, and again, there's very specific guidelines. I don't want to go too much into that, but very simply, you may receive a patient experience survey after your visit with us. I would love to read your comments. Thank you for your time and giving us feedback. So, you know, no incentives, no penalties, no promises, just very simply, you may receive a survey. And if you receive it, thank you for your time in completing it, because they do take time. Now, if it's Google reviews you're looking for, post it in all of your elevators. I have cards, you know, the cards at the reception desk that people can take to remind them that a Google review would be appreciated.
Very nice. So this sounds like it could be part of a more comprehensive or overall campaign. How would you involve team members in a willingness to recommend campaign?
Okay. So number one, ask your team members who use social media to follow your account. Number two, absolutely essential, when a person is mentioned in a social media post, let the person know and then ask them to add a comment of thanks. The same thing for when a team is recognized. And if it's not practical for people to ask people to put their own comment, at least the organization can post a comment. So I saw one done by the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York City. The commenter had written, Dr. Sue is amazing. I'm so blessed to have found him and recommend him to everyone. Now HSS, Hospital for Special Surgery, responds, thank you for your kind words. We'll be sure to share your warm regards with Dr. Sue. If you wish to share your experience at HSS, please visit. And then they give a link to a place where they would like where the comment would have more significance for them. So another opportunity to create some spread. And then three, and I think this is very important when you're talking about consistency across an organization, you want to provide recognition for those whose names might not be remembered for recognition in a survey. So for example, you know, nursing assistants. And I loved one time I saw that at New York Presbyterian Cornell, the floor was 8 Central West, and they created Instagram posts that look like newspaper columns. And the title of the column is called Best NAs for Nursing Assistants in New York City. And they're just comments by colleagues. You know, Evelyn picks up so much overtime. I don't know how she does it. She's always willing to float too, which is really nice. Danielle is so special. Seriously, I cannot tell you how amazing he is. And as you read these, it gets back to one of those Prescani drivers, the demonstration of teamwork, right? Now, does it take a little bit of time for their social media person to create this? Probably, you know, to collect these internal reviews and post them, sure. But it's very powerful in terms of feeling like, oh, if people like each other and are getting along, they're going to take better care of me. Another great example I saw of this was at Memorial Sloan Kettering in the family surgical waiting area. They had a huge poster board with the photos and names of all of the pre-surgical staff, the surgical staff, and the post-anesthesia care staff. And there were many. But if somebody, even the chaplain, for instance, if the chaplain came in because you requested a prayer before surgery, that person's name is there. And then there are comment cards, comment tear-off cards that you can just tear off and then make your praise known immediately. And so when you have those situations where everybody has an opportunity for recognition, I feel that people are more inclined to provide recognition for others. Now, how to get started, if you're just starting this, I think Alice Peck Day Hospital in New Hampshire had a wonderful model. I think it was just for a year that they did it, but they had something called the Social Media Champion Campaign. And the person who liked or shared the greatest number of Instagram posts during the month received an Alice Peck Day fleece blanket. I mean, it was a throw. It wasn't, you know, a big blanket. Mm-hmm. It was a throw. And it came in this really nice throw container. And so they had people commenting and sharing and just, you know, the algorithm was triggered by these comments, but they were also sort of getting people in the game, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Very, very interesting. If you were mapping out a strategy to increase patient willingness to recommend, what else would you include?
Okay. First, I would be looking at website quality. There's a clear connection between people being able to access information that they need 24/7. So is there an updated and accurate frequently asked questions section? Are there easy options for submitting testimonials? For instance, I don't know about you, but I often, when I go to a play, I don't actually look at the playbill until intermission. So sometimes people have gone, they've been cared for by someone they didn't know before. Maybe it's a specialist, a nurse practitioner, physician assistant. And now they go to the website to see something about that person. Is there a link there to see those that person's testimonials and also to submit a testimonial? Second, I would ask a serious question of how do you manage and minimize the risk of friction and service failures? There was a study done by Athena Health and their research vendor. They looked at 70,000 survey responses and they found that shorter wait times managed. So when patients estimated their wait time was 5 minutes or less, 82% said they would recommend the primary care physician. But those numbers dropped dramatically as the, you know, 6 to 15 minutes, 31 to 45 minutes. Anytime the wait was longer than 45 minutes, the willingness to recommend dropped to 47%. That's a big drop, 82% to 47%. So I will sum that piece about, because sometimes, you know, we'd rather spend our time on more fun things than friction and service failures, but everything that's wrong is costing you money. The third thing I would really focus on would be how do you stay connected with retired associates and physicians? And the question I ask is, what outdates faster than a jar of peanut butter? Well, it is, in fact, retirees. Retirees now have more time to spend with their friends, to make recommendations. They're still regarded as insiders and will be asked for advice when medical services are needed. And because people often have physicians about the same age as themselves, there comes a point in time when older people need to find a new physician, and retirees are in an ideal position to recommend that physician. Now, many former employees find it doesn't take long for them to feel out of date. So with the passage of time, they don't know the new physicians, they haven't seen the new rehabilitation center. So although they're still sought out for recommendations, they may feel less confident about making them. So there's lots of ways to engage, you know, inviting retired physicians to grand rounds, establishing a process to send retired nurses a thank you card during Nurses Week, asking people, do we have your permission to send you our internal communications and e-newsletters to your email? Now that you're retired, we'd still like you to stay connected. You know, many organizations have retiree associations, or you can ask a retiree to start one. Hosting a meet the doc or any new service, you know, invite retirees in for the preview, you know, tour of the new surgical center. Because now they've got something to talk about because it's new. We could spend all our time just talking about pulling in retirees and also ambassadors. And ambassadors are volunteers. There are people who care so deeply about your organization that they spend time away from their family to connect with people who feel the same way. They're absolutely passionate. They do it for no compensation. And so those same principles of educating them about CAP scores, if that's what's important, or helping them learn more about the organization, inviting them to your patient experience training sessions, and institute a process. This is one of my strongest recommendations about volunteers. Institute a process so that someone in the C-suite visits any volunteer who is hospitalized. You know, if it can't be the CEO, let it be one of the vice presidents goes and thanks that volunteer. Then number five would be, how do you recognize those who recommend you? And the easy answer to that is compliment the person who has complimented you. They've posted something, you post something back. If you're the person who was named and you know them, you can also ask, you know, on intake forms, who may we thank for recommending us to you? Or is there someone we should thank for recommending us to you? You want to have permission of the patient, because sometimes people may say, I had this experience myself when a neighbor asked me to recommend someone for a cosmetic procedure, and I recommended someone, and then that person, you know, was very kind, sent me a note to thank me. And I said, oh my gosh, I have to tell you, she didn't ask me for herself. She told me she was asking for a friend. So don't let her know that you contacted me. So we want to make sure we get the patient's permission. And then how do we demonstrate that feedback makes a difference? So like my dad saying, you know, no one reads the surveys at the Orthopedic Hospital of Wisconsin. They have a wonderful post and it says, do you wonder if anyone reads your survey at OHOW, OHOW? Our CEO personally reads each and every patient comment. And then they go on to say why that's valuable. And I love the idea of boards posted that say, you said ... we did, how we are responding to your feedback. And so what did the person say and what did the organization do as a result of that?
What great ideas. Now, as our time draws to an end, Susan, I'm interested in a new project that you're working on. You're coming out with a new book. Is that correct? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much. Yes, I am. I'd say I'm in the third quarter on a book on this topic, and it's just lots and lots of examples like we've talked about today. And if anyone is interested, there'll be an opportunity. I'm planning for the book to come out in January, and there'll be an opportunity for people for just like 3 days to purchase the book for 99 cents on Amazon. They'll have the full book, which is many, many pages long. And if my request would be, would you please post an honest review on Amazon? So if anyone is interested in being part of that or considering being part of that, my email is very simple. It's just Susan, S-U-S-A-N, at susanbaker.com, Susan at susanbaker.com.
And we'll put that in the show notes as well. That's a great opportunity for folks. My guest has been Susan Baker. Susan, thank you so much for having been on Sound Practice.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
My thanks to Susan Baker for her time and insights. It is with honesty and irony that I recommend her work to you. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org.
That is holy cow. Batman and Robin. Rick Capow.